Ooh, there's a little rain today in the space cave. Nice and calming. Tuck yourself away somewhere cozy and warm. Head out to the deep recesses of space. Make yourself comfortable. Engulf yourself in a nice warg. And welcome to the space cave. Let's check in with a citizen of planet Earth.
Hello.
Hey, Jamie.
Hi, David.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. You're at the beach with your family.
I am. Yeah, I'm actually on the Space Coast, which plays nicely into the Space Cave.
Where is the Space Coast?
That is going to be the east coast of Florida. It's close to Cape Canaveral, where they do all of the launches for NASA.
Oh, yeah, cool. You're so close to going to space.
I'm so close, yeah.
This is an interesting phone call because you, like, sent a tweet that said your telephone number, and then later you kind of revealed, like, that you hadn't really listened to the podcast.
No, I hadn't. I actually, the first time I saw your tweet, I realized that you had a new podcast, which was very exciting for me as a former Blasternaut.
Oh, cool.
So I just found out about the podcast, and every morning since I've been here, I've been taking walks on the beach and trying to catch myself up on episodes of Space Cave.
Oh, good. Well, I hope you're enjoying it. Sometimes people feel like, not compelled, but like they have a responsibility to, don't worry, I'll listen to all of them. And I feel like, don't subject yourself to that.
No, I will be honest. It does feel like a responsibility, but just to my fandom.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it's something I need to accomplish anyway, but I have been enjoying everything I've listened to so far.
Oh, good. Okay, good. Yeah. Well,
yeah,
don't make it a chore or anything. I hope you only do it if you
like
it.
Oh, no, there's no chore. It's just like easy listening. It's really nice to take a walk on the beach and take a listen. And when I get back, I live in Ohio. So when I get back to Ohio, I have a pretty long commute to work every day. So it'll be pretty nice to have something new to listen to.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, there are quite a few of them out now, so you'll have.
I know, it's a relief. I'm going to be honest. I had like a little bit of a mourning period when Professor Blastoff ended.
Yeah.
And even in comedy in general, a lot of things ended last year for me.
Yeah.
So Colbert, I know that was probably like late 2014, but then The Daily Show, we had David Letterman go off the air. So there was a lot going on where I didn't have much to grasp to. So when I saw your tweet, I got very excited.
Okay, good. Yeah, that was a weird year. A lot of turnover, and there were a handful of people. Well, I guess a pretty decent size group that among those that you mentioned that were, like, you know, on giant television networks. There were also Professor Blastoff was like just as ingrained in people like weekly, I think.
No, I'm serious. It really was. Like, every bit of what left last year was such a staple in my life. So I've been trying to find some sort of content to fill in the gaps or the huge void that has been left in my life as far as comedy goes. So I'm really excited to have your new podcast to listen to.
Well, great. So you're on, like, a family vacation?
I guess technically it's not new anymore.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, it's sort of a weird vacation. So I don't know if it... Please, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, it's in the first year, so I think you're still totally in... It's still new at that point. It's still kind of a puppy.
Okay, it's still new.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm on a family vacation. It's sort of like a mini, I don't know, maybe a hiatus from our typical lives. I'm here with my sisters.
Okay.
So I have two sisters that are pretty close in age to me. And we're here, it's kind of personal, but my mother passed away a year ago.
Ah.
And so we are here just to sort of remember her. Her beach was her favorite place, and we wanted to be here to sort of do everything we could to honor her memory.
That's really sweet. You sound like you're in pretty good spirits. Are, like, your upbringing and being around, I guess your mother in particular, like, was there a philosophical kind of, hey, this is the cycle of life, or I may not be here one day, or are you putting on a good front right now?
That's a really good question. I think it's a little bit of both.
Okay.
So in at least my eyes, she passed away pretty young. She died at 60. And it's nothing that we ever anticipated then. So that conversation was never had with her in particular,
mm-hmm.
to sort of prepare for life without her. However, she was the caregiver for all of our grandparents as they got older and were sort of suffering whatever ailments happened to them. So she was putting all of her effort and time into caring for them.
Yeah.
And that was sort of the lesson that she taught us.
And then that had to have been so strange. Like my girlfriend's grandmother was really ill, and her grandfather, so they're the same age, but he would drive into town every day and take care of her, and then he unexpectedly was diagnosed with a terminal illness and given like a few months to live, and it sort of caught everyone off guard, like, oh wait, you're the caregiver. So that had to have been,
isn't that, yeah, it's a crazy feeling. She even said that she would say she was she had cancer, and she would say things like, this isn't supposed to happen to me, I'm the one that takes care of people.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've had the last few years have been just riddled with the people being diagnosed with unexpected things. And it never really sinks in.
Do you think that's because of our age now? Like, do you think it's because we're coming to an age that we just know more people?
I hope so. But it's so depressing to think that's all getting older is more and more people who are eligible for terrible news.
That's what I keep thinking about too. So when I was younger, like a teenager, and I would read like Catcher in the Rye, and it was so full of kind of preparing to be, I don't want to say disgruntled, because that's pretty much brokenhearted and sad as an adult.
Yeah.
I couldn't comprehend that as a teenager, but I feel like it's just so, it's hitting me like waves so repetitively. But maybe that's what it all means. It is depressing to think about though.
It definitely is. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that you go through these cycles in life, and when you're young, I think when you're young and like a teenager, and you're exposed to like, here's what can really happen, you're still barely involved with being a part of the planet. So there's a part of you that
That's
isn't that
true.
Attached. And as you get older, you've grown quite accustomed to the people that are around you, the way that life kind of goes. And I think that's why old people have a really tough time leaving. So they're like, oh, this is all I know. I've been here for so long. And in that, I think that, I don't know. I think that you go through these cycles where maybe you're 20 and you're like, I got it. I could lose people right now. And it all makes sense. I get it. And then you're 25 or 30 and like, I hope no one leaves. I'm so desperately like attached to everyone. I was wrong when I was younger. I even if I do understand it, like, oh, it's a cycle and people are going to come and go. You get way more attached. And so I'm always going back and forth through those of like kind of understanding it and then being totally caught off guard.
Oh, absolutely. Well, even in dealing with just the process of grief and how it comes back and hits you, those are all of the stages. So, okay, people die. Everyone has gone through this. People lose their parents. These are things I tell myself where, you know, I'm doing okay. And then just one day I pick up my phone to call her and she's not there.
Ugh.
It's not possible. You know, it's just a terrible feeling.
Yeah. Oh man, that is.
Something. It happened 3 days ago, and it you think like, oh, I thought I was past this. Like I thought I got past this part. So that's really hard.
And I'm sure the things that people say, even if they mean well, like I had a friend that came over the other day and he goes, oh, it's always weird for me to come. It's still like 2 years later, weird for me to come up to your gate because I expect your dog to run over and say hi to me. And I was like,
That's so heartbreaking.
I know. It's like, yeah, I feel that way too. I don't fault him for saying it, but you must have things like that. Even if people mean well, you're kind of like,
oh my gosh, all of the time. We're reminiscing about a lot of weird stuff and how I think just as a culture, we don't really deal with grief appropriately or talk about it enough so that people know how to deal with it appropriately. So it's either people will say something and it's usually a little off base, even though they mean to be sweet, or they don't say anything at all.
Yeah.
And that is like, that's so alienating. So going back to work after, you know, everyone knew you were out for almost a month helping your mom while she died and no one says a word to you. It's so awkward.
That's terrible. And people have those things where they're like, you know, I was going to call, but I figured you were being bombarded. And then I thought a text was a little insincere. And so you're like, so then you did nothing? How is that in any way better?
You're exactly right. So I don't know how inappropriate it is to get into this, but we were reminiscing about what people said at the funeral, so what they would come up and say. And some of it was just sweet and lovely and endearing, and those things stand with you. But there was one woman who came up, and all she could talk about is stationery that she didn't like, that she wanted to throw away, but she thought maybe my mom would like it, and she really regretted not calling my mom to bring it over.
Oh, my God. It's kind of nice.
I get a huge kick out of that.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, sometimes things like that can really unite your family. Everyone just kind of, like, not wanting to laugh, but being like, this is so absurd.
Oh, we laughed so hard the night of the funeral, which sounds so morbid, but we were just united by those sort of things, so... Things that we never thought we would have to face or discuss with people, but that ended up being really comical.
Wow, that's great. Overall, my mom is constantly going, like, I don't want anyone to be sad. Like, I want everyone dancing at my funeral. I want them to be playing, like, Earth, Wind, and Fire and everyone having fun. And then you feel like that's a nice sentiment. There's no way anyone's going to be able to really follow through with that. And yet,
no.
I don't know. I've been to a couple memorials that were like a celebration of life. That there's still just this weird tone of like everyone's laughing and sharing stories and then just immediate tears.
Oh, totally. Something about it, there's just this, it's such a heavy cloud hanging over everything. So no matter, I guess, how joyous it can be and the memories and the funny stories, which are so beautiful and wonderful, it's just, there's this edge that surrounds everything that's so heavy.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain it, but it feels very much just like how grief processes. So one minute you're doing fine and you can tell a story, and then the next minute anything could come up. So just, I can't delete my mom's number from my phone, so when I go to my favorites and it's the list of my immediate family members, it just, you know, sometimes it just still takes my breath away to remember
that
she's not here. Yeah.
I know.
Sorry, this is like the most depressing intro.
No, it's like
ever happened.
No, it's like you said, people don't really talk about grief enough, and it's part of it, I think, is because people feel guilty in doing it, or that it's such a downer. Or I think it's healthy to talk about. I don't think it's depressing. I think you have mindset is great.
Thank you. I guess if I could get like one thing out there, so if people know someone who lost a family member or a friend or whatever, instead of not wanting to bring it up because it may bring up bad memories or it may bring up grief, just know that no matter what, that's always happening to that person under the surface. They feel that 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So saying something, even if it ends up being something silly, it's better to say something than nothing.
Even if
it doesn't feel like the right thing to say, or you don't know it had the right word, not saying anything at all just makes that person feel so alone and alienated.
That is good to know. That is, I think everyone can identify with that or say, I do feel that way. But everyone can probably picture a moment where they went, damn it, I've done that before, or I wish I had handled that a little differently.
Oh, and I've done it myself 100 times. I had a friend who lost her mom a year before my mom died, and I remember being afraid to see her because I didn't know what to do with myself. I didn't know how to act or what to say.
Yeah.
And you just don't know. You're not trained in that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, I think we're all a little better now. And I hope you have a beautiful vacation with your family and that you all get a lot of hugs and laughs. And and thanks for taking a little time to spend it with me. Well, I'll check in down the road and see how you're doing just in life in general. And
I would love that. Thank you so much. I appreciate talking to you. And I'm so excited about catching up on all the episodes that I haven't heard yet.
Cool. Yeah, we'll enjoy them. There's some good ones ahead of you. And thanks again, Jamie. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, it was great talking to you, David.
You too. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Kind of a delicate thing, obviously talking about grief. But I like what she said. Hope you enjoyed it too. I think it is good. It's cathartic to talk about it. It's helpful. And I just like, she had a good energy. I like her voice. I like Jamie's, she just seemed like she has a good energy about life. And, I'm sure that was a lot more difficult to do than perhaps she was letting on in the conversation. But, Yeah, oddly, after like an hour, 2 hours after we did that conversation, my grandfather died that day, which has been a bummer. And when people hear about it, they go, oh my God, I'm so sorry, which I feel kind of strange because it does suck. Like it, but it also, he was struggling. He was 93. He wasn't doing great. It just, it seemed like something that was kind of a release, you know, and yet you can't just go, oh, don't worry about it. Yeah, it was better. It was better that he finally succumbed to the end, which I don't feel that way. And I don't know. It's just different. Like she was the loss that she experienced, and I've experienced it in a variety of ways, whether it's unexpected or sudden, or an illness that takes a while to unravel, whatever. But the elderly, that's a different one where you just see it coming. Like, well, they're not technically sick, but they're not doing great, and it doesn't seem like they have much quality to their life. Yeah, I don't know. There's something odd about when they do finally pass away, you're just flooded with like the memories of their life, the good parts that you remember. And you can't help but there's just this primitive human feeling of like sadness. Maybe it's a mirror of our own mortality, or maybe it's just missing them. I don't know, but as much as you can convince yourself, like, well, this will be for the better. They're really struggling, and this doesn't seem fun. It would be like a merciful thing if their struggle was over, and then it happens, and you're like, ah, I miss them. So anyway, thinking about my grandpa, he was a good dude, had a good full life. I guess. It was good to see my family, and like Jamie was mentioning, you know, getting around everyone and kind of sharing the positive parts of it and of loss and whatnot. Anyway, I'm rambling on at this point, but it was nice chatting with her, and I don't want that to, like she was saying, like, oh God, I hope this doesn't bum out the episode. Ah, let it. You'll get over it. But no, this is a fun episode, and I think it oddly kind of fits in with, you know, part one, talking last week with Tony Thaxton about, you know, just life changes and transitions and moving on. And so it kind of fits into that. Life is inevitably changing constantly, whether you want it to or not. And some of them are of your own doing and others are obviously not. But we sit down with a little bit more of this delicious June Lake Brewing Saison Ale. And here's me and more of the coolest name in the game, Tony Thaxton. More Tony Thaxton, more June Lake Saison. You enjoying it?
Mm-hmm.
It's still good. Lovely. It's light. It's kind of crisp.
Tastes handwritten.
Tastes like a handwritten marker would taste. Yeah, I don't know a ton about Saisons. I don't know what I would compare it to, but it is a light, summery.
Yeah.
It's perfect. It's hot today. It's nice.
Yeah. It's one of those that, if I, again, not really being a beer nerd, but liking beer a lot of times, if a Saison will be like, yeah, I'll do that. Why not? Yeah.
And it's weird to me that you drink a lot of beer, but never have developed like an affinity for any particular type.
Yeah, and I have a lot of friends that are like huge beer nerds. Like mm-hmm. actually two of them in the band that I've toured with for years and still hang out with regularly.
Yeah.
And yeah, just, I don't know. I feel this, I have the same issue with coffee. Like mm-hmm. I drink coffee every day, but like I can't tell the difference between good coffee and bad coffee.
Yeah, sometimes for me it's like an aversion to that behavior because I don't really care for it. I don't want to see it in myself. And so, like, I'll kind of avoid that. Like, give me anything. Give me whatever. Mm-hmm. But then if I am left to my own devices, like, I will settle on certain beers where I'm like, well, if they have that, if there's, like, a row of 100 taps, I'll peek through and be like, give me that one. I like that one a lot. But, so I guess I have some tastes that are... Well, I don't know what I'm getting at.
No, it's weird. Yeah, I get kind of like obsessive about a lot of things. So I find it weird also that I don't
that
get more
strange.
Into.
Do you drink wine?
I will. I definitely prefer beer or even other
like
liquor.
Hard booze.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, if you hand me some wine, sure. But it's not usually my go-to.
So what do you obsess about? Other than Christmas, I've done the Feliz Navi podcast. Uh-huh. I had a delightful time. And I enjoy Christmas, but certainly not to a level. And it didn't seem like you were maniacal about it. It's just something you like.
No,
about.
Yeah, it's just a thing that I like. And honestly, part of it was that I always have loved Christmas. And I then one day was... I think this was in my months after quitting the band and knowing, like, what the hell am I doing with life now?
Yeah.
Not that the podcast was the answer, but I did want to do something, like, fun and pseudo-creative. And then I was like, well, what could I be about? And I was like, and Christmas was kind of coming up. And I was like, do that. And I was like, what if I did it all year long? And then I thought of the name Feliz Navipod. And I was like, well, that's just too dumb not to do it now. So half of it was just based on coming up with a stupid name. So
there's so many things there involved in just like the existential element of finding what makes you happy. And had to be strange because of the external factors of people going, you're in a successful internationally touring band. And you want to leave that. Like, yeah, people leave being the CEO of a company. People leave resort villas where they have a peaceful, casual life. People leave, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, I had a friend who moved to LA. I think he lived here 6 or 8 months and then just packed up and went back. And I was like, why'd you do that? Like, I wasn't happy. Like, yeah, I thought that was part of it. Isn't that like you move to LA, you're miserable, and then luckily things work out and you get like some sort of attainable goal and you go, oh, I guess all that suffering was worth it. Like, why? Your life's supposed to be good. You don't have to like sacrifice and be just miserable for huge portions of it in the event that it'll work out later. Mm-hmm. Whether I'll get some money, then everything will shake out.
Yeah.
And so to leave something, to have, I think that takes, I wouldn't want to say courage, but it takes like a pretty strong fundamental awareness of yourself.
I'm trying, and it's not a way I ever thought about myself, but because I kind of think of myself really as being afraid of a lot of things and being a big wuss, but my therapist tells me that I'm a risk taker.
I agree with her or him.
It really does come up because that's a thing I've been doing a lot in the last 3 years is a lot of therapy. And yeah, that does come up a lot of I think sometimes I'm better at maybe making the move I need to move. I think I'll realize that I need to make a change, and some things I'm better about addressing them sooner than I think. And sometimes I maybe think like, well, that's kind of not great right now, but once I get this in order, then that's going to fix that. And then there were just things that I just started realizing like, oh no, it's not just that. Like there are bigger issues going on here.
I had a period where I was convinced like one day, you know, I'll have like a house somewhere quiet and I'll, you know, work outside like I did as a kid. And then I started thinking like, I don't do that now. Why would I suddenly start doing that? So then I just went bananas and I had a house with a yard and I went and like, I took like 2 giant loads of weeds to the dump in my pickup truck and it really felt good. Like I planted new grass and I was like, oh yeah, I think if I establish these behaviors when I have limited means to exercise them, I'll only get better at doing them. So therefore down the road, it'll be second nature when I eventually have these things. Like you're always building the little foundations for this inevitable self you think you'll become.
Yeah. Yeah. I was worried when, you know, like I said, I was mostly worried about telling my parents, when I was leaving the band, but I was fully ready to just constantly hear like, are you crazy? Like, you're like living the dream.
People
like to say, but honestly, not a single person ever said that to me.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, when I told them, more or less the reaction was, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, they're definitely.
Like, I don't know how you did it as long as you did.
11 years. I mean, if you think of 1 year and you go, man, that last year flew by. Like, picture yourself in prison, not seeing daylight. That's long.
Yeah.
And being on a nonstop touring schedule is not prison. But there can be elements to it that feel similarly like, man, I want this day to end. And it just keeps going.
Yeah. And, you know, in some ways it's great because, you get to meet all these people you never would have met otherwise and see all these places you never would have seen. But, like, I've been so many places, but yet I feel like sometimes I feel like I've not really been anywhere because you're just in and out so quickly of every place. Like every now and then, maybe you'll get a day off in a cool spot or something. But like,
and then do you take advantage of it? Because I was going to ask you that. Like when you do end anything in life, you end middle school and you go, I should have asked out so and so.
Yeah.
And you end high school and you go, I should have run for blah, blah, blah. You know, I should have tried out for, and you go, oh, well, maybe a few. And then you start to develop patterns that in your life, like, that's just kind of who I am. Mm-hmm. And I'll look back on periods like that of touring a lot or whatever I was doing and go, damn, now in hindsight, I wish that I had like gotten myself up off the couch in that or off the bed in that hotel room and made myself walk around. But then you put yourself in that position again. You're like, I forgot how tired I was, eating a horrible diet, probably drinking a little bit more than would be great, but it's the only thing that kind of like medicate you to get you through the, enjoy the nights.
Yep.
There are a lot of things built in to where you go like, yes, it's so easy to look back. Like, oh, I should have been out there living it up, taking photographs, going to the local zoo. But you're not going to
grass is always greener.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I did get better. Weirdly, even though like as time went on, I started getting more depressed. I think though I was getting better at trying to take advantage of the thing. Maybe like deep down, I sort of knew like, oh, this might not be going on much longer.
Yeah,
and, because I do remember like the first, like especially like the first however many times like we went to the UK or Europe or wherever, like, you know, kind of seeing some things, but like it would just sort of be like, if we're in that area, sure.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't really make an effort to do things outside of that. Mm-hmm. And even sometimes days off, like other guys would be like, we're going to go do this, blah, blah, blah. And like, eh, I think I'm just going to kind of hang here. And then like later I'm like, why? Like I maybe never will end up there again. And so I think as I got older, I think part of it too was in 2009, I broke my arm.
Oh.
And I was terrified that I was, I've told this story a bunch too, but I'll just
stop bringing these damn rehearsed bits.
One complicated thing after another, and it was a very long year. And after multiple surgeries, then I the arm got infected also, and like it was terrifying. And like there was parts I was like, "Am I gonna lose my arm?" Like I didn't really think that would happen, but it wasn't totally out of the question.
Weird that that is not uncharted territory for a drummer.
Yeah, exactly.
You can do it with one arm just fine.
So I think after that, when I finally was fully recovered and like back out on the road, I think that sort of like made me try to start appreciating it a little bit more. But then again, though, it's weird. I took that approach of like, all right, I'm going to see a lot more and go to the cool places when I can. But then also like, and I was so grateful. But then, like, about a year or so later is when the, like, depression stuff really started kicking in. And I was like, oh, I don't know anymore. Do I want to be doing this still? I don't know.
I think when you get to that level, because depression always after the fact feels like you're mad at it. Like, oh, you talked me out of enjoying something that I should have loved. Like, no, yourself at the time knows. Even if you're the hero or you're the lead whatever, or you're making the most this, or you're the employee of the month, or whatever it is that you that everyone thinks, like, you got to be thrilled. If you are going home and just kind of like not even turning on the TV, just sitting there quietly, there's probably something your psyche knows that you don't, and trying to figure that out, you know, and you look back after the fact and go, why wasn't I happier? That was so cool that we were in the UK. You know, I went with my life mate recently to Europe, and I'd never been. And it was so strange to travel without it being for comedy that it was just like, let's go see stuff.
Yeah, I've never really got to do that. It's always been
I didn't like it.
Work.
I liked being with her. I mean, seeing the Eiffel Tower, cool.
Yeah.
But I like the walk over there. Mm-hmm. I like just kind of looking around and being in that city. And that's what is definitely missing on the road. Like, just walk somewhere by yourself.
Yeah.
Like, this neat. I'm seeing whatever I'm seeing, but this is a long, boring walk. You know, it's so much better to, I don't know, ideally to do both, you know, tour all the time and have someone there that, you know, you can be nurtured by. That feels great.
Yeah. That's a hard one to pull off though.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a lot of people. Would you still do that? Like, so you just moved in with your girlfriend.
Uh huh.
Or you guys are soon. So
no, we did. Yes.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, your housewarming is coming up. You know, if say, like for this tour, would you bring her along or would that be an option to be like?
Yeah, she is going to come out for parts of it. Like she, you know, can't come out. There's a lot of dates, so she can't really do the whole thing. But yeah, she's going to come out for about a week, which is kind of on the earlier side when we're going to be out this way. Going to just California dates. And then there's some other stuff that toward the end of it that she's probably going to come out for, of which those dates I still can't talk about. So, but she's going to come out, and I know she definitely wants to be there for the final show.
Oh yeah,
where we're all going to be a disaster.
She's going to be throwing roses up at you.
Yeah, it's going to be weird because just the thought of it being what it is. This whole thing has been weird because, you know, I already did my last shows. Like, this was like, oh, this is just kind of this, you know, extra thing and like closure on everything. And then, like I said, it's already been way more emotional than I expected it to be.
I'm sure you've been getting the suggestion from people that, like, it's commercially not a bad idea to hang it up for a bit and then, hey, did you hear us getting back together? Hey, you hear about the
secret shows? That seems to be what every band is doing now.
Yeah. I mean, does that occur to you guys, or does this feel genuinely like we're done here?
I mean, you know, I think even in the announcement that was the, like, press release kind of thing was, you know, it kind of just left things somewhat open. It's like, you know, we don't know exactly what the future holds, but for now, we're done.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that was again why it just made sense to me to, if they wanted me to come back and do it, because, you know, it was 11 years and 5 records and mm-hmm. and all this stuff. But yeah, so then just knowing that, like, there is this end date, and I already know that, you know, the girlfriend's gonna be at that lash, it's already gonna be like weird and emotional, and then my whole family's gonna be there, I know too. So,
because it is kind of like a weirdly similar thing to almost like a graduation, where, like, mm-hmm. you're saying goodbye to this period of your life that you, even if you had some bad experiences overall, you're like, that was a cool experience, and you can't do it again. Yeah. I mean, you can go to, say, grad school, or, you know, you can go get a master's or a PhD, or you can further your education, but it's never going to be quite the same as high school was, or mm-hmm. your first few years in college, or whatever. And then I would imagine for a band, like, you know, Letterman hung it up and everyone was sad except him. He seemed to be like, this is what happens. Like, you have
that was
to end
like
it.
The most, or I should say, the least emotion I've ever seen from someone, like, ending this super long, like, legendary thing.
Yeah.
Because I remember because I grew up obsessed with Letterman.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was fully prepared. Like, just the, like, final 2 weeks of his show, like, I was watching every, because admittedly, I'd kind of not been watching as regularly in the last few years. But, like, those final weeks, I'm like, I gotta be watching all these, because these are going to be, and, like, every night I was crying watching episodes. And then, so, like, the last one, I was, like, fully prepared. I'm like, oh man, I'm going to be a fucking mess. And then he was just, like, totally calm and
the Foo, like, Fighters montage just made me smile.
Yeah.
I was doing a show in Chicago, and we all stayed after and watched on the TV screens, and, like, they had a bunch of them there, so we were all kind of surrounded by Letterman. Yeah. And yeah, everyone's just kind of looking at each other, kind of, you know, I think a few people might have been a little misty-eyed, but overall it just felt like, yeah, this is how things are supposed to end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and everyone says that about, like, their funeral. I don't want anyone to be sad. I want everyone to just have a party. Just enjoy. Mm-hmm. Like, that's easy for you to say. You won't be there. It's going to be real difficult. Even if people are laughing, going, oh, you know who'd get a kick out of this? The person who's gone right now. Right. They would find this hysterical. And yet, you can't just have unbridled joy. There's some mm-hmm. notion of, like, it'll never be this way again. Even if you guys do in 5 years go, hey, you know what? Our kids are grown up, and or our whatever it might be that's, you know, I just miss it. And you get back together and be like, now it feels more like, not a business trip, but right. It's not going to feel the same. It's been summer camp for over a decade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's weird because, you know, like I said, I did leave and I wanted to leave, and I was, you know, trying to move on with life. And I think everybody else now, too, like, three of the guys have kids now. And so, like, everybody's just kind of at that point, and, you know, we're all getting older. And so everybody's kind of at that point. It's like, yeah, maybe it's time to
mm-hmm.
to go. But, yeah, you can't deny, though, that this was this huge, even though we're ready to let it go you can't deny like how huge of a part of our lives it was.
Yeah.
And life-changing that it was for
because
all of us.
Because in a lot of ways, like a defining point of your life. You know, like people say, oh, Tony from Motion City Soundtrack.
Like, nobody knows who the fuck I am unless they know of the band, and I still don't expect that to be the case. But yeah, if someone knows who I am, it's because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can admit that.
That's big of you. So like ending it and this new chapter where you're kind of exploring a little bit, started a podcast, you have a new relationship. Do you have like a vision of yourself, sort of like me out there gardening in this house down the road? Like, do you have like a self of yours where you're like, here's where I'd like to get? Or are you just more, is it easier to just like, I'm just going to kind of go and see what floats my way next?
I've really been trying to take the say yes approach. Because I really, when that was my thing for a while, was when I started toying with the idea of leaving, for a while I was going, well, I think I don't want to do this anymore, but I don't know what the hell.
Yeah.
This is like all I know how to do. Like, I don't know what the next move is. So I kept trying to tell myself, like, let's not make a decision until I know what my next thing is going to be. But then the depression stuff got so serious that like, I just like, was like, I gotta be done.
Yeah.
And so I got out and really had literally no clue what was next. And so I've just been trying to, when things come my way, just trying to say yes to them and just dabbling in little things here and there. And, you know, certain things are working, some things don't work. And yeah, there's been some things that have maybe gone in directions I didn't fully expect, usually in a good way. I've always, cause I played drums for so long, and so I was like, I don't know, like I don't hate playing drums anymore. It's just like, I don't know, it's just a little different right now.
Mm-hmm.
And
look at a drum kit and see it as representative of something else?
No, I don't think so.
But does it still call out to you? Like, is there still the little kid like, whoa, cool, drums?
It's starting to again now.
Oh, good.
Yeah. In the last, like, year, it started happening again. But there was a couple years there where I just wasn't very interested at all.
Yeah.
But one of the first things I tried doing after I left was teaching a little bit. And because I like kids a lot too, and I thought, oh, this will be good, like I can work with kids and still be playing drums and you know, it maybe like take their lives in this certain direction. And I did not enjoy it. I thought I was really gonna like it. I did not. I still think I maybe could, but I didn't think I was very good at actually teaching. And I also just think that it really depends on the kids too, because I think that some kids want to be there and want to do it, and some kids' parents want them to be there.
Yeah.
I think I had a little too many of the ones that their parents wanted them to be
a lot
there.
Of parents in like Ramones t-shirts and stuff.
Yeah, and you're like explaining this thing to the kid, and then you look over at him and he's just like looking at the ceiling like not listening at all. That gets a little it's not
right. Hey, this is supposed to be fun. Hey,
exactly.
I had a little bit of like the not like you're looking a gift horse in the mouth or, but that feeling of it's hard. Life is just hard. It's hard to attain any level of success at anything you do, regardless of how much work you put into it. And then when you have something that takes off, how would you possibly look at it and be somewhat critical of it or second guess it? And, you know, like hosting the sci-fi show, there was, you know, you could extrapolate forward and be like, what if I'm doing this in 10 years? What if this like defines my existence and I'm just like a host, like hosting clip shows? And like, well, a lot of people have it a lot worse. You just take advantage of and enjoy it while it's here. But this notion would always jump into my head of like just the getting mired down in just life's inevitable difficulty, you know, that everyone is having, like, God, I just can't catch a break.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a break. You know, when you, I guess like going back to, you know, you being so depressed and having, you know, having those thoughts, that had to have been the other side of it. Not necessarily everyone's expectations or like, what are people going to think? But just like the fear of, if I do leave this, what if I'm at McDonald's in 5 years? Yeah. Like, you know, that's people don't give that enough credit, that's ballsy to leave that going like, oh, I'm not going to work at my father's firm. I don't have like this comfortable fallback plan. Yeah. I'm just jumping out of here because I think this plane, for me, my seat is on fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was exactly what it was. Yeah, I had no clue what the next move was, but I knew that I couldn't keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, and I still, a lot of people, even though everyone was supportive and understanding at the time, I, you know, in time since, I'll have a lot of people like, do you miss it? Like, do you ever like regret your decision? And honestly, no. Like,
yeah.
There are little things I'd think on that I would miss here and there, but like, not the right things. Like, not the kind of things that make me go, oh, I wish I was still doing that. Like, it'd be like the dumbest things, like thinking about like a day off on tour where we like, me and a couple of guys would like go to dinner or something. It's like, I can just do that with friends here. It's like, you know, but there was something about doing that in just this like weird city that, because usually your days off would kind of be in this like weird town that's like in between major towns,
because mm-hmm.
it's like a halfway point for the bus to stop.
Oh yeah.
And so you just be in this weird place that you're probably never ever ever gonna be in again. And so there was just something about like, oh, let's, you know, I saw a Mexican place over that way, let's go there tonight and hang out. And I don't know, there was always something fun about it. Mm-hmm. And so just, you know, things like that are the things I would miss, but that's not something that's like, oh, I never should have quit. I can't go there anymore.
And you got to do them. You know, when someone stays in like as a camp counselor into their 30s, you're like, what are you still getting out of this?
Right.
Like, you're afraid to miss it, but it's okay to miss things.
Yeah. I, this is a weird comparison, but I thought about this recently of like, cause you know, I still don't exactly know what I'm doing. Like, now I'm coming back to this just for, you know, one last little hurrah, but like once that's done, I'm kind of back to, all right, now what? And
do you mean financially or just being a human, just existing?
Both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And while I do like playing music, and as I said, I've started enjoying it more again in the last year, you know, I'm much more open to going down paths like that again, more than I was a few years ago. But there is this part of me that's like, you know, I'm not Keith Richards, or, you know, I'm not going to be most like, I'm not going to be doing this when I'm 70 years old.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? And there's some things like sometimes people pull it off, but then there are a lot of times where it's just, it becomes sort of sad and you're like, you're still doing this. And
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, I've compared it to like, it seems like a strange comparison, but pro wrestling, like the movie The Wrestler, you know, he was like this old, like has been kind of, but he was still like, he didn't know what else to do.
So had to go tanning. Had to go, get his hair bleached.
He didn't know what else. And like, that's really, I was into wrestling a lot as a kid. I don't watch it anymore, but like, I find the real world side of pro wrestling fascinating.
Absolutely.
And so like that movie is actually like pretty accurate on what those guys go through. And so like, you know, he got old and he didn't know what else to do with his life, and there's this part of me that's like, I just don't want to end up like that,
man. I followed the San Francisco 49ers, and they a few years ago had Ric Flair come in and give them a pep talk before.
I remember that happening. Yeah.
Have you seen it? It was as sad as the movie The Wrestler, because he's still trying to summon like the whoa. Mm-hmm. And the guys are just, maybe 10% of them are aware of who he is. And then he's trying to relive kind of these, it just felt very much like that movie. And so sad, because you're like, oh yeah, you don't want to be the band on the back of a flatbed trailer doing leg kicks to 9 people eating cotton candy at some state fair and going, ah shit, where did we go wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you definitely want to just, I saw Built to Spill in LA, and they just have stayed, you know, somewhat pot-bellied, gray-haired, disheveled kind of t-shirt rocker dudes.
Yeah.
But prior to that, I had seen this other band I won't name, because they were trying to develop this sort of Neil Young kind of intimate, hey, we're gonna sing some songs, we're gonna bring out some friends, local friends of ours here in LA, and they're just girls, mostly girls, chatting in the back who didn't give a shit. They were just there to be at a cool place.
Yeah.
And the band had to go, please, guys, be quiet. We're going to play. And it was like, Neil Young doesn't have to do that.
Right.
When you have that cachet, when you've developed, mm-hmm. we're going to have an intimate show. You just play the songs and the songs bring people in. But the band's just up there begging. And then to see Bill to Spill, who are, you know, 30 years older than these guys, maybe, you know, 25 or whatever, but they have that audience. They've developed mm-hmm. them over 20 years. And then you see through the crowd little, like, 5 to 10-year-olds with, like, air traffic controller headphones
yeah,
on,
right.
walking through the crowd. And some of them are, like, sitting up on the amps watching their dad play. And I was like, oh, that's how you can pull it off. And that's pretty rare.
Yeah.
It's just, like, well, it seems genuine.
Yeah, and I think they're that love that, like, genre where they were never, like, a band that's necessarily, like, on stage, like, jumping around, going
yeah.
crazy or anything. And so
yeah.
I think, like, that helps translate to when you get older a little bit.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And no one thinks about that. Like, we were talking about, like, when you develop a band, you don't go, guys, here's our aesthetic. We're going to dress this way.
Yeah.
Not to say that's dumb. Like, Devo does that or did that. You know, bands have done it, and, like, we're going to wear suits
uh-huh.
or we're going to all have cool eyeliner and spiked hair, and we're going to be badasses with chains on our leather jackets. Like, awesome when you're 25. But when you're 55 and you don't have as much hair to spike up, it's going to look a little sad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You seen those any recent Twisted Sister pictures?
Of course I have.
There's a Twisted Sister documentary now, apparently. I haven't watched it yet, but I really want to.
I saw the Lemmy one. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I've seen that.
What did you think of that?
It's been a few years. I remember enjoying it. I don't remember being blown away by it, but I remember enjoying it, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, it just... They hid a lot of sadness pretty well. Like, I felt like he said a couple things where they're like, hey, you've been with a lot of women. He's like, I'm 63 and I've never been married. If it's 1,000 women, add up how many that is per year or mm-hmm. per week. It's not like an insane amount for
right.
a rock star. And then you see, yeah, just him with like his tight pants and the boots. And it did seem like, I like that he stayed in that shitty little apartment. And
uh-huh.
he didn't like, because being alone in a palace where you're like Daniel Plainview from There Will Be Blood, you're just like empty footsteps everywhere you go, like, oh boy,
right.
what did I do?
Yeah. I just didn't, wasn't he always watching Family Guy on his bus?
Yeah.
He's always that's one of the main things I remember from that, yeah.
Yeah, and his apartment's just disgusting. And he was always at some bar,
the Rainbow,
yep. playing trivia, drinking Jack and Coke.
Which I had heard long before I saw that movie. I have been there a couple of times, but not much. But I remember people saying, like, if you go to the Rainbow, you will most likely see Lemmy there. Never did, though.
I want to say someone told me that as well. Like, he's probably there right now. And I was like, that's all right. I would feel so sad, I think.
That's like, are you aware of, this doesn't exist anymore, but there was a karaoke bar in Burbank called Dimples. Do you know about this?
No.
What happened at Dimples all the time? I'd heard this from so many different people that didn't know each other. It was this thing of, they were like, if you go there, Dennis Haskins, a.k.a. Mr. Belding, is most likely going to be there.
Singing karaoke?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
And the place closed, like, end of last year or something, I think, and ended up there with some friends one night. Mr. Belding.
Really?
Did a little happy together on stage.
He sort of skirted around some sexual abuse allegations a few years ago,
did he?
Right? I could be wrong on that, but
it surprise me.
It could have been an internet hoax, but it seems like he was dragged into that along with the Ferris Bueller principal guy. Like,
oh, right,
years
right,
before.
Right. Yeah.
So good to see he was acquitted of all, all charges. I think about L.A., we're here. We're at an age where, like, we've seen each other. We've known each other a couple years now, probably.
Mm-hmm.
So we see each other at different events and, hey, buddy. And it feels like, oh, yeah, we're here. And there's a cap on that that feels like, you know, you're familiar with who was here, obviously, prior to that. But being so unaware that Hollywood is like a high school constantly. There are always new classes coming mm-hmm. through, and it just doesn't end. And being kind of Lemmy sitting there for like the duration. And that's like an instant, that's a Hollywood thing. Like, oh, that was a part of Hollywood. That, like, there's probably some shrine by that trivia game now at the Rainbow. It's like,
oh, yeah.
That guy was here. And that's sort of your mark. Aside from all the art you made, like your place in LA, this place where people right now are packing up and leaving going, I didn't want to be an actor anyway. Screw that. And that's happened every day the last 100 years. It's just weird to be a part of that.
Yeah.
Because everyone that's here while they are in class, so to speak, is like, well, not me. Like, mm-hmm. I'm certainly LA wouldn't care so little about me. It would just cast me off.
Right.
But it could.
Oh, yeah. And it probably will.
Chances are very high that it will.
Side note, going back to what you said about there's probably a sign for Lemmy. Dimples had a plaque, even though he's still alive, they had a little plaque at the bar for Mr. Belding. Like, apparently he had like a seat.
Ooh. You know, just put in those years day after day without getting some sort of accreditation. I would love to think that he was the one that initiated that. Like, guys, come on. I spend like $50 a night here. I'll buy the plaque. Just put it up. Or how did they present it to him? Like, was it in a little box that they opened? Or did they just pull a sheet off the wall? Huh?
Oh, man. Yeah, I wonder what he's up to these days. He has to be sad that Dimples is gone.
I don't wonder at all.
It's all I think about. I don't sleep at night.
When you were mentioning Dimples, it kind of briefly made me think of Maeve's Residuals. Did you ever hear about that?
No.
That was to me like the ultimate LA, sorry it didn't work out for you, kid. Uh-huh. If you got a residual check and they would be, you know, people that used to, now I think you get like scale or a day rate, or it's very, people are still working off of residuals from shows they were on. But I think the pay structure is way different nowadays. So you used to, like, if you did a spot on like Melrose Place, you might get paid for that for like years beyond mm-hmm. every time it was shown. So if you went into Maeve's with a residual check for like, I think it maybe had to be embarrassing, so like 27 cents or something, you know, under a dollar, they would give you a free drink. You
know, okay, so it was a bar.
It was a bar. Okay, yeah. Maeve's Residuals, yeah, it was a bar. That, I think it's now it's just called Maeve's.
Okay.
And so you can go in, but before you used to be able to go in, just it was their way of being like, this town is rough. Like, no one deserves to get a 38-cent check. That right. is, and
I'm surprised that place still exists, because it seems like there
it doesn't.
Probably,
it doesn't. Oh, it, okay. It's still, I think it's still called Maeve's.
They're not doing it anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
it was gotcha. Just driving them right out of business.
Gotcha.
There's just so many of those people.
Say, yeah, that can't be a good business model.
No. And you would think, I'm sure when they set it up, they're like, you know what? People who are working, they're not going to care. They're making money. You know, uh-huh. Are we really going to get that many people that are so downtrodden and destitute that they're going to... Yes, you will. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. the majority of people coming to that bar.
How long ago was that?
I don't know. I know that I've been in the bar, and and that was probably 3 years ago, and it was not residuals then.
Okay.
So I think they probably rescinded that, who knows, 5 to 10 years ago or something.
Yeah.
But boy, to hear people talk about it, it was the glory days. Because you'd meet friends. People would come in and be like, are you here because of the
right.
you know, party of five check? Me too.
It's both a good and terrible idea.
Yeah. It's kind of, it gives a charm to LA.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
But totally, totally non-feasible as far as a business model.
No.
That's a shame. Well, what is the most important thing to you? Kind of start winding it down a little bit. But you've been going to therapy. You're happy in your life. You've got a fulfilling relationship.
Mm-hmm.
What is important to you? What do you have your sails set in a direction where are you rowing hard against the current? Or are you just kind of, what's the overall essence of Tony Thaxton at this moment?
Oh boy, you know we're gonna get this heavy.
And please answer within 5 minutes.
I think part of me is still sort of figuring that out
mm-hmm.
because I think for so long that I was really focused on the band thing, and that just was my life. And while I had other things that were important to me, like that was like, you know, that was it. Like that was the big thing. But you know, I'm getting older now, obviously, and
you're getting older.
I know, it's contrary to popular belief. But I don't know. You know, the changes I made in my life have done me really well. I'm in a great relationship now that I'm super happy about, and you know, I see things going in that direction of wanting to, you know, have a family and things like that. Like that's definitely, I'm not saying like tomorrow, mm-hmm. but it is definitely a thing that I've always, you know, seen myself going in that direction. But you know, I don't know that I I feel like maybe this is the first time in life that I've actually been like, okay, yeah, this is where things should be when I start thinking like that. So yeah, I just, you know, I want to, it's important to me to stay happy because I was very unhappy for a long time. And being happy is a lot better than not being happy. Smartest answer you've ever gotten?
I'm going to make that the new tagline for the show.
I know, it's like, yeah, I'm just, I don't know. I'm not good at getting like super deep or anything. And
well, it's a hard thing. I mean, it's a silly question. You're like, oh, me? What's my overall underlying philosophy to life? If I could just sum it up. No one knows. But I think it changes all the time.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome that person that you knew in high school. It's like, dude, it's about hitting keg parties. And then you see them 20 years. It's about hitting keg parties. Like, nothing changed, bro. I'm still good at pinball. Like, wow. To just have that. That's the best. But yeah. I think, you know, almost week to week with some people. Like, you know what? Now it's about details. No, you know what it's about with me? Not caring about the details. You know what it's about? It just seems endless and kind of monotonous. And I think when you start accruing like sort of happy points, like, hey, sweet, got a successful relationship. I must have done something right. I fundamentally, or maybe it was meant to happen, but I feel like I am, meaning I in the sense of like all of us, like you work on yourself a little bit or you change certain behaviors or habits. So I'm glad to see it's going in a direction you like.
Thank you. Me too. Yeah. And I just, you know, and I'm still just in this mode of, like I said, trying things and just kind of seeing where things take me. And like I've had some things come up that I, like, you know, a couple years ago would never have expected to get those opportunities. Like I've a thing actually that I would love to do more of that I've started doing a little bit of is actually writing music myself now, and actually I was doing it for the podcast, but now it's actually started to turn into like doing it for other people. And I got to do it for, I had my first paying TV song.
Whoa!
Recently. And
way,
like,
to go, man.
Thanks.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that's a direction I could definitely, you know, get, because then I get to do the creative thing with play music, write music, record music, and then sleep in my own bed at night. Like, so
how
I
many
could
instruments
get
do you play?
Well, drums are definitely what I'm most proficient at. I can dabble. I can bullshit my way through guitar and bass. And
is that how you're putting stuff together right now?
Yeah.
So you're not selling it to TV. You're doing more than like bullshitting your way.
You know, it's
take that, CBS.
It's nice. It's nice when you have friends in, you know, in the business that, you know, throw you a bone, and then, but then, you know, it's all about getting that foot in the door, because then other things come from that, and that's exactly what has happened. And, you know, I think like, can I really do this? And then I turn it in, and then, you know, to get emails from like the producer or whatever, like, love this, anytime we need music, you're gonna our first call. All right, cool. Like, yeah, so let's get more of that.
I'm trying to think, I think I have a couple things I'll talk to you about after the podcast that we can collaborate.
Yeah.
Get that Huntsberger-Thaxton collaboration.
You just want some of that name in there.
If it does happen, it's going to be blared across the screen. It'll just say Huntsberger and then in huge font, Thaxton.
Yes. I'm sure we've talked about this before, but I'm just thankful that you just think it's a cool name and don't feel the need to make Tony Braxton comments.
Oh, no. I think that's offensive to Thaxton.
I appreciate that.
It's just cool. It's just syllabically and like mouth orientation. It's just good.
Mouth Orientation is my new band, by the way.
Oh, playing, good. Yeah. All right, nice. Mouth Orientation. Hey, we're Mouth Orientation. Mouse? No, Mouth. Well, cool, man. We're both out of this delicious June Lake Brewing Saison. If you're passing through that area, it's a wonderful little, it's not an antique town, but it's very much like a pass-through tourist town. They have a little, like, Jolly Cone, one of those, like, little, like, towns out of the 50s where you can walk up and they slide over to think, what can I get you?
Uh-huh.
Can I get a half and half swirl? Mm-hmm. You got an ice cream cone or a burger. It's the best. So go check out June Lake and enjoy. I'm thinking of Lee Vining as the town, which I believe is near June Lake. And I bet you they have June Lake Brewing beer there. Anyway,
why not?
What they don't have there yet is Tony Thaxton and mouth orientation. But look for them on tour soon. And the I will mention this, and probably did mention this in the buffers before I introduce you for this episode, but Motion City Soundtrack kicks off the farewell tour May 3rd?
Something that I want to say 5th, but you might be right. It's early May. We'll say early May.
Ring in Cinco de Mayo with Motion City Soundtrack.
Yes, and it's going on for a bit. Not all dates are posted yet, and I keep telling everyone, don't tweet me and say, you're not coming to blank blank, because not all the dates are up yet. So settle
They're
down.
They're going everywhere.
Be patient. That's all I'll say.
You're in Dubuque? Be patient. They're coming. Tony Thaxton, thanks for stopping in the Space Cave, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
Go check Motion City Soundtrack on tour. Go check them out. They're playing now through the summer, all the way into the fall, as he mentioned. So look for tour dates. It is officially up and going now, so you can check and see if they're coming to your city. Thanks to Dan for putting the episode together. Obviously, thanks to Jamie for calling in. And send her some warm thoughts. Thanks to people for rating and subscribing. And you can get One-Headed Beast, my animated special, on Vimeo. And then the audio is on iTunes. And the Junk Show was just this past Sunday. I'm assuming it went well. Thanks to those of you who came out. It was also Mother's Day. Hello to all the mothers out there. I hope you had a wonderful day. And I hope Game of Thrones didn't keep people from coming to the Junk Show, because it's always fun. If you're in LA the second Sunday of any given month, come out to the Copper Still and see the Junk Show. It's fun. And I will be in Portland and San Francisco, so check David Huntsberger for that. Those are both the end of May and into early June. And thanks again to Ryan for the beer. He donated last time, but that carries over into this episode. And if you'd like to buy the show a beer, just visit thespacecave.com. It'd be more than appreciative. And I'll try to get some like posters or t-shirts or something like that up on the site, if you'd like to adorn yourself or your domicile with some gear. Anyway, let's get out of here. I'm going to play a song for my grandpa. Perhaps he's floating around somewhere out here, and he'll stop by the Space Cave and say hello. He hated modern music, and then I'd be listening to, even if I was listening to like Neil Young, he didn't like it, which you would think an old person would be like, yeah, this checks out. He really only liked like really old, like the quintessential old people music. And he would come out when I'd be like working out in the garage. I'd be making stuff out of wood, and he'd come out there and hear whatever I was listening to. This is terrible. What is this? And it always made me laugh. So I'd turn it down for him. And the only time he ever enjoyed it, there was a Radiohead song on. And he came out and was like, oh, this is kind of nice. So he wasn't curmudgeon-y. He was just the ultimate hipster. He was just real hip. He would only tolerate Radiohead and songs like this. So I guess for him, here are some musical notes sent out into the ether that hopefully reach him. And I'll miss him, but he had a good full life. And anyway, here's some Ella Fitzgerald for my grandpa. Thanks for stopping by the Space Cave. Woods told my hand, both thine eyes are cute to what they do to me. Hear me holler, I choose a sweet Lollapalooza in thee. I'd feel so rich in a hut for two, two rooms and kitchen, I'm sure would do. Give me just a plot of not a lot of land, and thou swell, thou witty, thou grand, thou swell, thou witty, thou sweet, thou grand, wouldst kiss me pretty, wouldst hold my hand, both thine eyes are cute to what they do to me. Hear me holler, I choose a sweet Lollapalooza in thee. I'd feel so rich in a hut for two, two rooms and kitchen.
witty, thou grand.